You're listening to Scopes Monkey Choir.
Hi there. This is a Scopes Monkey Mini.
Scopes Monkey Quartet?
What?
A Scopes Monkey Chamber Choir?
No.
A Scopes Monkey?
With the...
This is our report from the opening night of the World Science Festival here in New York City.
2012.
Where we went to see an event called Icarus at the Edge of Time.
Yeah, we talk about it. We just had to say World Science Festival.
What? World Science Festival!
Yeah, and we meet LeVar Burton. Okay, bye.
So we're here in the lobby of the gorgeous theater, which I've already forgotten the name of.
The United... I forgotten what it's called, too. Oh, my gosh.
Well, we'll update that. Anyway, it's a gorgeous theater.
The United Palace Theater. That's why I couldn't remember. What a strange combination of words.
Do you remember that period when the palaces were not united?
there was a whole
Game of Thrones going on?
I can't imagine what this place would be like if it were not united. It would be very chaotic.
We just saw the Icarus event, which was really fun. It's a multimedia extravaganza.
Icarus at the Edge of Time, a film by Al and Al, with a live score played by the Orchestra of St. Luke's, and the score by none other than Philip Glass, and narrated by LeVar Burton. Good old Jory. And
it was really fun. There's tons and tons of kids in the crowd, and they seemed to really love it.
Yeah, there were some kids in front of us who, in the lecture beforehand by Brian Greene, called out when he asked, "Does anybody know what happens if you go to the edge of a black hole?" And the kids in front of us said, "Spaghettification."
They were like four. It was amazing.
It was really quite amazing. Yeah. So, maybe we should talk to a kid. Let's see if there's a kid willing to talk to us.
Sure, sure.
Okay. Yeah. Tell us your names.
I'm Arman.
I'm Rohan.
I'm Sabir.
And how old are you?
I'm 12.
I'm 12.
I'm 11.
And what brought you here tonight?
Well, my school recommended this.
Oh, excellent. But did you come with your class or did you come on your own?
No, I came with my mom.
So what did you think?
We enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just enjoy.
The character Icarus was very inspiring to me. Uh-huh.
Did you know the original story beforehand?
Yes.
So what did you think of what they did to it?
I thought that it was a nicer way that they made it.
Uh-huh.
And along with that, I thought that it was a new concept to an older story.
Yeah.
So I really liked that.
What about you guys? Did you like how they changed it?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of mind-blowing how they made that film and all of the graphics and everything like that. They combined the visual and the audio together so perfectly. It kind of like stuck to me.
Did you know some of the science that they were talking about beforehand?
Yeah, in school we've been talking about that. So I was a bit familiar with it, but I learned a lot of new things as well.
And did you think it was a good combination of the fictional story and the actual science?
Yeah, because they move the time period up a lot, so it's a new era. So they have spaceships, and kids are allowed to go in spaceships up to outer space. And Icarus is a character who, in my opinion, is a gifted child who can make... who grows up to be an amazing philosopher and is now, at age 14, building, like, spacecrafts.
And is that sort of inspiring? Are you interested in science in general?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much for talking to us.
Thanks for talking to us.
So, just to fill everybody in on what was happening there with the kids, the way they... David Henry Hwang adapted the original Icarus tale, and he placed Icarus in a generation ship, basically.
Going to Proxima Centauri.
Yeah, where there are apparently intelligent aliens who we're going to meet.
Spoiler alert.
Well, anyway, so Daedalus is the commander, Icarus is his son, and Icarus, rather than flying too close to the sun, he wants to fly to the right up to the event horizon of a black hole.
The generation ship comes... across an uncharted black hole is what they call it.
Which is kind of weird. You would think that there wouldn't be an uncharted black hole on the way from here to Proxima Centauri.
Well,
Proxima Centauri?
I don't know.
But in any case, so he does this, and he's sort of a genius kid, and he's built a little spaceship that is capable of doing this, and he has all his calculations right, and he knows he can do it. But what he hasn't accounted for is the time dilation that occurs right at the edge of a black hole. So time slows down for him right at the edge of the black hole, but on the ship, they're still moving at their own regular time, at least whatever that's going to mean in the ship.
For him in the little runabout, time is normal, but for the observers, his father in the main ship, it looks like he just slows down.
To the point where he practically stops.
Right.
But then he makes it out of the black hole. Is this really a spoiler alert? Should I not tell this story?
I don't know.
So he makes it out, but when he makes it out, it's like 10,000 years later.
Yeah.
And the path that his own ship was on, of course, everybody he knows is gone, but the path that his ship was traveling is now an intergalactic superhighway, and he meets the aliens, and he hears his own story in their library,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a cool idea.
Yeah. I know the basic idea, I gather, Brian Greene came up with.
Yeah.
So I feel bad thinking that I found a plot hole because he's Brian Greene and I'm not.
A plot hole?
Well,
an uncharted plot hole?
Outside of the black hole, right, where time, he comes back out of his black hole adventure. He comes back, it's 10,000 years later, right?
Right.
The black hole is still next to the path where the ship had gone, right? So presumably the black hole had been there the whole time.
Right.
Right? So, but to the outside observer, he slowed down, and they saw him slow down so much that it looked like his ship was just frozen near the black hole.
Practically,
right?
Frozen.
Practically, right. So, but they wouldn't have lost track of him, because over the 10,000 years, he very, very slowly would have gone around the black hole.
That is a really good point. So they would have been tracking him the whole time.
They would have known exactly.
Yeah, right,
there's
at the edge
that
of the black hole.
Stupid kid.
There's that stupid kid stuck at the edge of the black hole. But maybe the light can't escape enough for them to perceive him there.
Yeah, in which case he got close enough that he shouldn't have gotten out. But hey,
where's Brian Greene? We gotta find him and ask him about this.
I'm sure. I expect that he understands black holes better than I do. It's just a hunch.
But it's also science fiction. It's a very cool idea, and he gave a spoiler himself in the lecture beforehand, because he said that it was that Icarus was not going to die, that he gave it
right.
a twist. So.
Right, which I thought was nice for him to say, because that was, of course, the first thing I thought of was like, are they really going to send that little cute kid into a black hole?
No, instead he's going to come back out, and everyone he knows is going to be dead. That's a much happier ending. So now we're here with Maestro Brad Lubman, who just conducted the concert tonight. And I just wanted to ask him about, he informed us that this piece was actually premiered 2 years ago at the World Science Festival. And I just wanted to ask him about working with the film and with LeVar Burton and the ideas around this. This is basically a live score to a film, so do you work with the film to put together the orchestration?
Yes, it's actually, you know, it's quite complicated, because Philip Glass didn't want to have a click track, because he felt that, if you don't have the click track, then the music can breathe a little bit,
yes.
right? Which is true, having worked a lot with click tracks. But there are moments where things have to be synchronized with the film, so if you're off, right, how do you synchronize? So what I did was I got a copy of the DVD that had a digital clock running at the bottom of the screen. And I wrote into my score the time code at certain points. Sometimes it would land right on a beat, like in this measure. Oh, look at that. The second beat of that measure is 18 minutes and 26 seconds. So I'd write that in. Then in other measures, I'd write a general sense of where I am. And I practiced with the DVD, with the sound off, of course, to see if I could conduct through the piece and keep up with the time code and synchronize with the time code. And that's the way I had to do it. It's a very different technique. I mean, you don't need to do that in any other form of music. So that's how I did this. And it's a funny thing, no matter how precise you try to be or how precise you think you are, Sometimes when you run through it, certain sections are spot on and other sections, wow, I got about a second behind there or ahead. But it's always a different section.
That's almost a metaphor for what was happening in the film.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, I
mean, next time you could just have a tiny black hole in the projection booth. Yeah, exactly. And if you guys get ahead, you can just put it right by the projector.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, that sometimes that happens. You have to sort of be the black hole. Right. So look at that. We're getting ahead. Hey, everybody, let's slow down. But you have to do it in a very subtle way, of course. And that's a very strange thing because you see the clock ticking. I mean, you see the hours, the seconds, sorry, the hours, the minutes, the seconds, and the milliseconds. I thought I could train myself to follow the milliseconds. It didn't work. But you see the seconds going by, but your tempo is not related to clock time. And you have to say to yourself, well, now that I'm getting slightly ahead, how am I going to slow this down in a subtle way? It's very strange. You know, I can't quite explain what it is because you're moving in one time and the clock is moving in a different time. And you know that you're either 2 seconds ahead or 1 second behind. And in a few measures of music, you have to make sure that you're back on. Very, very strange experience.
Were you cueing LeVar as well?
No. No. He worked off of a... he had a separate cue. He has a video... We both had video monitors. Okay. His video monitor would give him a general blip of light at the point that, you know, around which he's supposed to enter.
Gotcha.
And he was amazing. Yeah. He was incredible. He really brought something to this, you know. Anyway, so...
Speaking of which, we've been informed that he's right over here, and if we want to talk to him, we should hurry, because he's about
go
to leave. Thank you
chat.
So much. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, my pleasure.
My name is Haiting.
Haiting, okay. LeVar.
This
Matthew.
Is Matthew.
Matthew, hi, LeVar.
And we have a podcast called Scopes Monkey Choir, about the science of music.
Nice.
And our listeners probably know most of your known accomplishments, but we just wanted to ask you about narrating this orchestral score for film. Is it the first time you've done anything of that type?
No, I have narrated orchestral pieces before, and this is the most fun I've ever had doing that kind of work.
Excellent.
Yeah, yeah. I love this piece. I love Philip Glass's score. I love the text that Brian and Henry David Hwang crafted in terms of the reimagining of the Icarus tale. Orchestra of St. Luke's.
Yes.
Come on.
Hooray.
Give it up. They rocked it. They're so good. They're such great musicians. This was a blast for me. I love it. It's storytelling at some of its highest expression. It is really the opportunity to tell story with music and visuals and spoken word. You don't get that chance all that often in a live setting.
With a science educational bent to it as
well. With a science educational outreach component to it. It's a win for everybody, all souls concerned.
Well, we won't take up too much more of your time. We really just wanted to hear your take on it, and thank you so much for your performance tonight and all the good work that you do in general.
Hi, Ting. Thank you so much.